is Jared of the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live at Bridgestone Arena. Preds tonight taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Hal Gill will join us in 30 minutes, followed by the Preds pregame at 6 o'clock, Predators game day, and of course, the game right here in 2 hours, Preds and Tampa Bay. Interesting article from one John Glennon, Floyd. Oh, and now would be a good time to remind the people that we've got our school supplies out here as we're teaming up for the Season of Giving presented by Sudden Service with our friends at Pencil, LP Pencil Box, which are school supplies for Metro Nashville schools. Come on out, and we need dry erase markers. So maybe you're on your way to the game. Stop on by, grab a pack of dry erase markers, bring them right to us here at Pete and Terry's Tavern or to our offices at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike or at Sudden Service Convenience Stores on select days. More info, thegamenashville.com. Interesting stats from one Johnny Glennon, Floyd Reese, and it's about the big dog, Derrick Henry. And it is Derrick Henry has taken the next step, we all know, and he's balling just like he was at the end of last year. But is Ryan Tannehill the reason why? And Johnny Glennon in The Athletic writes the following. Maybe we should be crediting Tannehill's passing prowess with something else, an improved Derrick Henry. Based on the numbers, it appears Henry's benefited greatly from the Titans' more threatening aerial attack. Consider that in the first 6 weeks of the season, Henry carried 113 times for 416 yards, 3.7 yards per carry, and four touchdowns. So that's 13 for 416. In the half-dozen games Tannehill has started, Henry's carried almost the same amount of times, 119, but he's run for 724 yards, 6.1 yards per carry, and scored seven touchdowns. Glennon continues to write, here's some evidence that suggests Henry has more room to roam than he did earlier in the season. According to NFL's Next Gen Stats, Henry faced eight or more defenders in the box a lot through the first six games, at least 20% of the time in five of those contests. But in two of the past 3 weeks, defenses have seemed to back out of the box, perhaps realizing that they also need to worry about the Titans' passing attack. Henry has gone up against eight or more defenders less than 20% in two games during the past three, a stretch in which Henry has rattled off 188, 159, and 149. Floyd, do you think Ryan Tannehill is to credit for Derrick Henry's resurgence?
Well, he's certainly part of it. I mean, I think, you know, when you're not running against eight or nine in the box, you got a better chance of gaining yards. And I think that's probably why we saw early in the year we had so many of the no-gain negative plays. And now we're not seeing near as many. And I think there's two reasons. I think Tannehill is audibling and making sure they're in the right, you know, if they got eight in the box, they're throwing the ball. And he can throw it effectively enough that you start backing out. Well, all of a sudden you say, okay, we can't play eight in the box. We've got to play coverage. And now you've got, you know, you're running seven guys, which is what is normal.
Do defenses look different when you watch the games? Like, when you watch the games and you watch the defenses and how they prepared for Henry when Mariota was out there, and then, you know, can you look at it on TV and feel a difference between the two?
Yeah, You can see the difference at the line of scrimmage. And that's why when we get into obvious run situations, we get into third and ones and things like that, they're sometimes harder to run because they don't care. On third and one, they're saying, yeah, go ahead and throw it if you want.
On the fourth and one touchdown run, and I think Tony Dungy pointed this out on the NBC show, Justin Houston jumps inside. If the Titans run that ball up the middle, Henry loses a yard and a half.
Right.
And the Titans get stopped right there. But because Henry bounced it outside, he ran all day.
Well, they did a good job. Arthur did a good job early. The first play, he fumbles, that was a 10, 12-yard game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what he did was he got to a point where he would motion guys, get them in a position where he could get the ball outside to Henry, and Derrick made some yards on that. Now that's effective, and that you can't, especially a team like Indy, you can't do what you want to particularly with the interior three guys, if, in fact, the ball's going outside. Mm-hmm. You know, now you've got to change what you're doing with those guys, which makes the inside softer. And now you're able to pound it up in there and gain yards.
So I do think that Tannehill has had a humongous positive influence on Derrick Henry. And I look at those two as like the perfect duo for each other. Like, they complement each other. It's like a basketball tandem, right? Like Kobe and Shaq or Jordan and Pippen. Or it's like you can't sell out for the run because Tannehill will beat you if you sell out for the run. But you can't just drop back and try to force Tannehill to make uncomfortable throws, because the second you do that, Derrick Henry's off to the races for an 80-yard touchdown run. The only thing that I would say, though, is Derrick dominated at the end of last year when he didn't have this passing attack. So is it really the passing attack, or is it Derrick who is just a slow starter, and once he gets going during the season, he becomes this unstoppable force at running back? I mean, it feels to me like Derrick Henry's going to end up leading the NFL in rushing this year.
You can. You've heard me say, if you want to stop the run, you can stop the run. But you have to make that your total focal point, which means that
if they want... Tell Louisville football that, because they don't know.
If they want to throw the ball up and down the field, they're going to be able to do that. And that's not what you want. So, you know, it is... I mean, I think you're probably right. I think they complement each other. But if Derrick did not have a quarterback that could throw the ball downfield like we've seen, he wouldn't be gaining 188 yards. You know, he'd be gaining some yards, but it wouldn't be running up and down the field like we've seen the last couple of weeks.
Even though he did it last year?
Yeah. Last year was a fluke. I mean, that's you playing Jacksonville. Jacksonville's horrible.
Giants.
Yeah, horrible. I mean, and I'm not taking anything away from him. You know, he did it. It's in the record book, and more power to him. But it's you can't count on that. You can't say, okay, we're going to go out here and we're going to gain 250 yards like we did against Jacksonville. Well, guess what? Good luck on that.
So you think that if Henry wasn't out there doing what he was doing, then it would be harder for Tannehill to do what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. Sure. If they're not worried about the run and they're teeing off on the pass, oh, yeah. Because we wouldn't be able to protect. We can't pass block. So that would be bad.
So I still think part of this that nobody's talking about is Luan and Saffold are actually really good when they run the football. Those two guys, when they run the football and they pitch it to the left, those two guys are just bulldozing people, and it's giving Henry room to run. And that may be the other thing that they missed when they didn't have Luan in there, was that they just weren't bulldozing people. I know Luan and Saffold drive everybody insane, especially Saffold, because he cannot pass block. He cannot pass block. But he can run block. And I think that has a bigger thing to do with this than anything else. But I believe Henry and Tannehill are the perfect combination for each other, because you can't key in on one or the other guy. And the stats say that.
Which is great, because that gives the quarterback the option to be in the best play virtually every snap.
And how much of this is Tannehill changing plays? Because we talked about this yesterday. When Tannehill gets to the line against Indy, he looked like Peyton Manning up there with all the things he was barking out, and he'd move guys on different sides and bring guys in and bring guys out, and like, he was doing everything out there.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much of that is a designed look. Like, how much of it is, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to set up in this formation, and then the quarterback is going to audible. The quarterback's going to call this out to change the formation, and we're going to see how the defense reacts to it, because then that'll tell us what the defense is doing. And how much of it was getting the line and Tannehill getting up there and saying, uh-uh, we are not running this play. You know, delta, delta, delta. And all of a sudden, it's just a totally different play. Like, and I don't know what the amount of that is.
Oh, I don't know either. But I know we're doing a lot more than we have in the past. Now, that's just a gut feeling by me, watching him and what he's doing. And I think that has to be, because not only does he have good recognition, knows what to audible to, but they have good, they have confidence in him. You know, they're willing to say, okay, if there's something that you like better than this, go ahead and do it. And he's right a bunch of the time.
So, again, the stats say Henry, now that Tannehill's in there, less eight-man fronts. And I think our eyes tell us Derrick Henry is balling. And he wasn't balling early. He was having an okay season. He's balling. He may lead the NFL in rushing this year, which would be so great. The GM would have to eat so much crow if Derrick Henry leads the league in rushing.
Why and is that? Why
because would... you said he wasn't going to lead the league in rushing.
Wow. Yeah, I'll stand by that.
And I said he was.
Okay.
And so even though we said, got there in the most said, roundabout fashion.
You said he's going to lead the league of rushing, and I said he wasn't.
Yeah, I said 1,600 okay. yards. And
no,
he might
no.
get it.
Six, no, lead the league in rushing, whatever the number is.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but then I also said I thought he was going to get 1,600 yards. And remember all my formulas that had him like, if he does this, he'll be running more than Eric Dickerson ever did, like all that kind of stuff. But the numbers are what they are with Henry. Let's take your phones. Your thoughts on Henry and Tannehill. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. And Derrick Henry might need to make some room in the trophy case. We'll discuss. Jared and the GM. We are live from Bridgestone Arena. Pete and Terry's Tavern. Coming up next, that on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let me tell you about Authentically American. That's right. I got my Authentically American jacket on because we love Authentically American here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Promo code Jared, my name Jared, J-A-R-E-D, for 20% off. Nothing is a better Christmas present for Dad than made in the USA Authentically American polos, jackets, sweatshirts, sweat ink, and more. As you know, I got Authentically American for every occasion, and you should as well. Authentically American is made in the USA. That is a brand that is about America. It is an iconic American brand, and it is going to be the next big iconic American brand that is truly made right here in the United States of America. So be like me and get Authentically American. Promo code Jared, 20% off, Authentically American, online at AuthenticallyAmerican.us. Authentically American, the next iconic brand that is truly American-made.
Would you say the success of the passing game helped the running attack probably the last several weeks here?
I think it all ties in. You know? Just trying to be as balanced and gain as many yards as we can. And each and every week, what we feel like gives us the best chance to win.
Vrabelcheck, Mike Vrabelcheck. Hey, what do you think about how the run has helped the pass? I heard someone ask him a question yesterday of, what do you do if they take Derrick Henry in the run away? And Vrabel said, there's two options in football. Every snap, there's two options, run or pass. So, Derrick Henry may need to clear some room in the trophy case. Because 3 weeks ago against Kansas City, Derrick Henry's 188 yards and two touchdowns made him the FedEx Ground Player of the Week. Then the Titans had a bye. Then, against Jacksonville, Derrick Henry's performance with 150 yards and the touchdowns and made Derrick Henry the FedEx Ground Player of the Week. And this week, Derrick Henry is nominated for FedEx Ground Player of the Week. So Derrick Henry is looking to make it a three-peat in the FedEx Ground Player of the Week. Floyd, I got a pretty good feeling Derrick Henry's going to get it, which means that, again, you can say what you want about Derrick Henry, but if the guy is the FedEx Ground Player of the Week 3 weeks in a row, that means you're probably doing something pretty special.
Well, yeah. I mean, he is. I mean, he's gaining a ton of yards. And you can't, I mean, you can't take that away from him. I don't care how you cut it. So, I mean, he's been special.
I mean, he's really been special. I feel like Derrick Henry doesn't get the credit for how good he's been. Like, people, now I say that, he's just won Ground Player of the Week 2 weeks in a row and is up for it for a third week. But that is, I mean, Derrick Henry's going to make the Pro Bowl this year. Derrick Henry might be an All-Pro this year. Like, I have a hard time believing that they would vote him over McCaffrey for All-Pro, but he could be a second-team All-Pro running back. I mean, he is really there. Let's go to your phones, as promised. 615-737-1025. Michael is up next on Ryan Tannehill. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, guys. First of all, it's awesome to see the Titans playing well. I'm really kind of hitting on all cylinders, you'd have to say. I'm interested to know your take, and if you heard any talk at all, even in the preseason, when the Titans chose to trade for a backup quarterback, ostensibly in Tannehill, if that wasn't really kind of hedging their bets a little bit, and that they had already sort of moved on in their minds that Marcus would not be re-signed under any circumstance. Just be interested to know, because if Marcus was playing early on, realizing a lack of confidence, you know, in the building, as they say, how do you think that impacted early on? And I do think the whole team is just playing better. I think that's part of the deal, that the line's playing better and everything's just kind of clicking better. And you can give Tannehill credit for that if you want. I think there were some things that are going better now that Marcus might have benefited from as well. But my point is more about why they went and got Tannehill in the first place.
Okay, so I think that – thank you for your call. I think that's kind of revisionist. I don't believe that. I think they went out and got Tannehill to avoid the Week 17 scenario they found themselves in last year, which was, oh, my God, a playoff game for the play-in for the playoff. Mariota can't play, and now I'm stuck with Blaine Gabbert against the Colts. I think they wanted to avoid that.
I mean, I think they were covering all their bases. And they're saying, you know, well, what if he gets hurt in the third week? Then what are we going to do? Well, we've got to get a better backup because there's a chance of that happening. And I think they went through all the different scenarios and said, you know, what are the chances of, and, you know, fortunately for us right now, they made the right decision.
Let's go to Ellie, who's up next here on Jared and the GM live from Bridgestone Arena. What's up, Ellie?
What's up? I'm just happy that they changed their fundamentals with the footwork, the offensive line, and Derek, and that's why they're flourishing. I discussed 3 weeks ago. We have a problem with Corey Davis, and what Corey Davis needs to do is run every pattern as if he's going to get the ball. He had a bomb that he underran. Tannehill did not overthrow it. He underran it. He shifted gears. He tried to go from second gear to fourth gear when he should have already been in fourth gear. And that's why Raymond scored the touchdown. If Corey Davis did that, he had the potential to be a Pro Bowl player. He needs to run every route as if he's going to be getting the ball. Even though he's not the first option, he's got to assume he's going to get the ball, and he'll go to the next level. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellie. Floyd, I mean, we are getting to the point with Corey Davis where they're going to have to start making some decisions on him.
Well, I mean, I only saw it once. Ellie may have seen it several times. The play he's talking about where he overthrew Davis, mm-hmm. I thought Davis looked like he couldn't run. I mean, I saw that and I kind of went, oh, there's part of the problem right there. So that could have been completely wrong. He could have been exactly right. You know, he could have been, hey, he was just gliding along, and then all of a sudden he sees it and tries to get, you know, from, as he put it, from second to fourth, and couldn't do it. And I hope that's the case, because, you know, we haven't thrown a lot of deep balls to Davis, and you'd like to think that's like I'm watching Phillip Rivers and San Diego, and they've got the Williams kid.
Oh, they just chuck it.
They just rear back, and they throw it as far as they can, and he jumps up and gets the ball, and, you know, there we go. And I keep thinking, well, geez, there ought to be something that Corey Davis can do that makes him special. He's too big. He's too fast. He's too everything to just not be able to find a niche.
I just don't think he's good. I mean, I think he's a regular run-of-the-mill guy, like Sanu. You know, Sanu in New England. When he was in Atlanta, he was a great number two with Julio on the other side. He was a great number two. That's what Davis is, whatever. You know, he is what he is. And it's tough because a lot of the guys on this team are just what they are. They, you know, he's whatever. But Davis gets treated differently because he was the fifth overall pick. So there's more angst from the fact that he is just whatever.
I'm hoping Sanu is still adjusting to the program. I mean, because he's talking about Sunday night. I mean, he's a much better player than you saw Sunday night. I was really I thought he would do something for him and do something quickly, because you've got to be pretty smart to pick up what they do.
And I thought Corey Davis would do something around here, and he just really hasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, Corey's had flashes, but he's never really – he's never been consistent. And I wonder, like, he's a great blocker down the field, which I don't want that to take away from him. But I wonder if he doesn't have the attitude. You know, the Titans don't want selfish guys. I wonder if Davis doesn't have the attitude to be a great receiver.
I don't know.
Where he demands the ball on every play, where he – I don't know if he has that or not. A.G. is up next. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, A.G.
Man, my mind is in a pickle this evening. I think John Robinson and the Tennessee Titans ruined Marcus Mariota. What do you think, Jared? I think they ruined that fine young man. No, I'm just joking. But I really wanted to ask y'all. They ruined him. Now I wanted to ask y'all, what do y'all think about what are our expectations for the tandem of Casey and Simmons for the rest of this year? Because I'm ready to see a bigger impact out of these guys. I don't know if it's too early to be expecting a big impact out of Simmons. He's just coming off an injury. But I am ready to see more flashes, like I was saying with the linebacker that we got out of Alabama last year. And like I said, Corey Davis and him. I'm ready to see some impact.
Yep, thank you for the call. Twitter was going crazy because Simmons knocked Quentin Nelson over last week. But I don't really notice him much on the field.
I have been disappointed in Simmons, to be honest. And maybe it's because of the build-up, and maybe it's I expected to see something from him, you know, even flashes. And then he flashed the first game he played a couple of times, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, that's a start. Now let's see where we go from here. And I haven't seen him do anything since. So I don't know. Casey, you know, made a few plays this game. So he looks like he's getting back to normal for him. But Simmons, I don't know. I mean, I keep telling myself, hey, you know what? He's only been in uniform for, what, 5 games or something. Mm-hmm. What can you expect? But
you still want more?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think you're going to get it?
I have no idea.
Hal Gill going to join us next. Speaking of what our expectations are, have high expectations for the Predators. They're not meeting them. Hal will sit down with us. Is it time to get a little worried? We'll discuss next. Chair to the GM, live from Bridgestone Arena. Speaking of the Predators, Smashville Live is this weekend. You do not want to miss Smashville Live. Tomorrow night, Smashville Live will feature special guests Matthias Ekholm and Matthew Olivier live in Cool Springs at Brewhouse South. The show starts at 7 o'clock. A limited number of autographs or pictures will be available, so be sure to get there early. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company, and Red Spirits and Wine. If you miss any of the show, we've moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Just search Jared of the GM in Apple or Spotify. Log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. Rate, review, and subscribe today. Jared of the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jared of the GM live at Bridgestone Arena. Preds and Bolts tonight. And what is, I don't want to say, and what is a matchup of the two reigning President's Trophy winning disappointing teams, but that is the case. And as bad as the heartbreak against Winnipeg was 2 years ago, it cannot be worse than what Tampa Bay went through last year.
First
when they
round.
Got swept by Matt Duchene in Columbus in the first round. Hal Gill, presented by Puckett's, joins us here on Jared and the GM. Hal, as I said yesterday to Floyd, Preds win 3-0 on Friday. I got excited about it. Pekka's rested. He's back. He's ready. But just as the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away on Saturday with a 3-0 loss. Why can this team not seem to really get themselves going and get on a run here?
Good question. You know, I think they slipped a little bit on, and they looked really good. I thought, first of all, Pekka looked fantastic. He was dialed in. I think, you know, the time off that he had, he was able to refocus, get back on his game. And he looked awesome. The team looked good around him. And then everything just kind of slipped off after that. And there's a lot of reasons you can look at. First of all, you have Thanksgiving. You fly out. You play a game. You fly to Florida after. And then you get up and play another game. And you're in a building that isn't as loud as you're used to. And it's kind of a dead atmosphere. And it was a boring game. And I feel like they just never had that spark in that game. So... I think it's something. I don't think they were bad. It just they went, didn't have that extra gear, and so I think that's you know, it is what it is, and you kind of put that game behind you, come home, and try to get a win in against Tampa.
What did you make of Peter Laviolette going back to Soros the other night? It seemed a little odd that Pecorine had not missed three games in a row while healthy since 2008, since I was in high school. And Soros wins the two games against St. Louis. Peter stays with him Wednesday night against Vegas. I understand going with the hot hand, but do you really believe that there was not like a that there wasn't something to that that had to do with Pekka?
As far as what?
Like his standing or how he was playing at the time or all the above.
You're saying why was Pekka out?
Yes. And was that the right thing to do?
I think Soros looked good and they were just going to keep going with it. You know, and I think you'd have to be in that coach's room because I'm sure they're kicking around trying to figure out what's the best way to handle this. You have two good goalies that deserve to play. One came out super hot. The other one wasn't. Then one kind of came around and the other one wasn't. I think it's a lot to do with the way the team plays in front of both of them. And, you know, and then in the end it's you know, you got to go with what your gut is as a coach, you know, and you're going to get Van de Klok, the goalie coach, is going to give his 2 cents, and all the coaches are going to sit around and talk about it. That's why Laviolette gets the big money. He's got to make those decisions, and, you know, I thought Pecks looked great. You have him play, and I think you feel good about it in Carolina. And then Florida, you put Juice in there because it's a back-to-back, the first one of the season, and back-to-backs are tough. It's not easy to play in a back-to-back. It's exhausting.
We, in the offseason, went through kind of a philosophical change. You know, we were going to alter the direction a little bit, you know, be a little bit more aggressive on offense and maybe not great. Are you seeing that in your mind?
We saw it in spades first 10 games. I thought that they came out flying and they were buzzing, and then I think there was so much focus on being offensive that the defense, the mentality slipped a little bit. And so they tried to pull it back and be defensive and keep that offense. And then it was, I think they're just, it's a balancing act. And you look around the league, there's a lot of teams doing the same thing, trying to figure out where their team is, what who they are, and how they're going to do it. You know, you have to be the biggest thing for me is you have to be together. You have to be in a 5-man group. You know, you look at St. Louis, who's hot right now, and they're playing great hockey, and they played great hockey down the stretch last year to win it, and it was because they're a 5-man unit. And when you're 5 men around the puck, you can support it defensively and offensively, and that's how you get going, and that's how you get out of a slump and stay going. And I think that's what they figured out. I think the Preds, you have some guys that want to run. They want to go. They want to get that big goal. They want to do whatever it takes to help the team. And then you have guys that are staying back, and I'm going to lock it down and play defensively and be that defensive stalwart. And, you know, you got to get them on the same page at the same time. And that's what's hard. That's why it's not easy to win in the NHL.
Now, how much harder is that? It is making that change and finding that balance when you've got a couple, you know, you get an Harvey that's hurt, and then you bring in a couple of new guys, and you take to it's like you never catch up.
Yeah,
right?
you never have those same pieces together. That's why, you know, you look at Bonino's line with Smith and with Grimaldi, they work so well together, and they feel like they just know where to be, you know. Bonino is always the guy on the forecheck that's a high guy. He's in a good defensive position. If the forecheck doesn't work, he's always back. But as soon as he sees possession in the corner, he goes right to the net. And they know that he's going to the net. They're not worried about who's back there anymore. They're going to the net. And I feel like they jive together. And like you said, you have other guys going to line up and changing. Arvey's out. Arvey's played with Johansson forever.
Yeah.
You know, they've always been playing together. And so there's an adjustment period there. But it's not an excuse. It's you have to figure that out.
Yeah,
it's just part of the game. You have to figure out what is going to make that line tick for that night. And Laviolette's got to put them in a position that they can go out there and do that. But it is difficult to do that when you're not playing with the same guys.
Hal Gill with us, presented by Puckett's. Hal, what do the Predators need to do if they're going to get on a roll? Is it cementing a lineup? Is it, what is it, do you think, in your mind that this team is kind of lacking? And if they do, they got it, they're in place, and they're ready to go.
Well, first of all, I hate saying this because, no kidding, duh, getting that first goal is huge, and it's been big for them.
Okay, but I will say this, though. They've had leads in a lot of these games, and the two St. Louis games and the Vegas game, I think, are all an example of this, where I felt like the team was hanging on for dear life, hanging on at the end of those games. And it worked the first St. Louis game. It failed them the second game. They won in the shootout. And then it failed them with 0.2 seconds to go in the Vegas game.
Okay, so, what other thoughts do you have?
You want to know one thought about this team I have that's unbelievable?
What else do you have, Jared?
And I know what you're doing, but...
No, I'm curious. What?
Go back.
What's it
going
to take? What's it going to take for the Preds to win?
Go ahead.
What's it
going
to take for the Preds to win, Jared? I want to know. It's not the first goal because that doesn't matter. You said that. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, the first goal helps, but Laviolette always talks about how the first goal doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win the game.
It doesn't mean you're going to win the game, but it's a pretty good start, right?
Theoretically, yes.
Okay. It dictates the way you can play the game.
It's better than them getting the first goal.
Yes. Can we agree on that?
Yes.
All right. All right. So, you know, there's that. And then I really feel like it's there's points in the game that they need to step up and they need to realize the urgency. I think in Florida they had that 5-on-3 and they need to get it done. I'm not saying you're going to have five moments in a game where you need to step it up. There's, you know, you always talk about the beginning of the first part of the first minute of a period, the last minute of a period, killing a big penalty, having a power play. A 5-on-3, I think, is so big that you can step up and get a goal there. And I think that changes the whole game in Florida. And I think we're talking about a different result because you get energy from it. You get so not just the goal, but the energy that comes behind it. And there's key points in the game where momentum shifts, and you can either step up and change the momentum, or you can keep the momentum going your way. And I think that's where the Preds are having a hard time is stepping up in those big moments. And I think they play consistently well now. They weren't doing that earlier. They were so inconsistent and all over the place. But the last 8 to 10 games, I feel like they found out what their game is. Now they just have to step up in those big spots and get the goal.
Is that an experience thing? Is that a knowledge thing? Is that a...
Well, I look at it. Last year, I felt like they didn't need to worry about those big moments. Everything just kind of happened for them. You know, like they're winning division. Last few years, right? It's just like winning conference, winning division, presence. You know, they're just winning. And so you don't realize how key each moment is.
Yeah.
And so now when you have a little adversity, and this is good. This is good that you're going through this now because it's in there. These guys are big-time players. I think there's guys that can step up. And, Roman Josi does it a lot. He's the guy who steps up. And when you need something to happen, he's the guy who splits through the offensive zone and makes a play. And things start to turn around for the Preds. But they need more of that big plays at big times.
Hal Gill with us. I cannot believe I'm saying this, but thank God Kyle Turris is back in the lineup. And I'm not one of these people who thinks that it's going to solve like all of the problems the Preds have, but I'm watching some of these guys they've run out there since the Arvidsson injury, and I'm thinking to myself, these guys, Daniel Carr, for example, not to knock Daniel Carr, he's not as good as Kyle Turris. And Kyle Turris has had his struggles and all of that, but it just made no sense for Turris not to be back in the lineup. He's back in the lineup now. Why do you think they gave him that extended benching?
It's a good question. And all they've said is lineup decisions. There's a lot that goes into it. First of all, you have to have – it's not just, you know, hey, we got five linebackers hurt. Let's throw a quarterback back there and let him play linebacker because he's a really good player. You know, like it doesn't work that way. You need to have guys that play specific roles. So I really felt like they were going into games where they needed to be to grind and get to the net, and I feel like Daniel Carr lends himself to be a winger, first of all, that can get to the net. And so they were looking for that. I thought he played well, but it didn't really get it, didn't really make a splash. And I feel like he needs to make a splash. And so Kyle goes back in, and, you know, the hard part is Kyle was playing on a fourth line and a kind of a checking line with Watson and Sissons, great players.
He's not a bottom six player.
He's just not that player. I think he's a player that can make plays off the rush, but the Preds really haven't been that team. Mostly their rush is Ekholm and Josi pushing up through the neutral zone, and so it doesn't, their game doesn't lend themselves to make plays off the rush. So, you know, Kyle's got to find his way, and now it looks like he'll be back at center, and he's playing with good players, and can he go out there and do his thing and create offense? I mean, ultimately, that's what he needs to do. He's not a guy that's going to go and bang bodies on the forecheck. He's a smart player that needs to create offense, and he needs to be able to move, and from the center position, he can do that a little better than he could on the wing. So, you know, it's tough. I've gone through the healthy scratch, and it stinks. It's the worst. And you go to bed, and you can't believe that you're getting scratched, and it's the last thing you think about, and you wake up, and it's the first thing that goes through your mind. I got to get back in the lineup. So now he's got his opportunity to get back in, and I'm sure he's ecstatic and wants to make the best of it.
Oh, yeah, it plays bet off.
What were like, this is going to sound crazy. Like, and I, you know, if he and Laviolette, they both handled it well, especially him. But I'm sure, you know, and Peter said, we've had a lot of talks. Have you had those talks with coaches where it's like, Hal, we're scratching you for the extent, for the foreseeable future right now. We want to go with Johnny Joe. He's more handsome and, you know, a better skater, etc. Like, what are those conversations like?
Well, at first, it's infuriating, you know. You go through one game and you go, what's going on? What's the story? And they explain it to you, you know, you need to do this, you need that. And then, you know, it happens again. You go out and practice. You try to do the best you can in practice. And then the next game comes up. And these guys don't practice anyway. There's not enough time. And so it makes it difficult. But then you go up and you say, you know, it's game number two. You say, what's going on? And then it becomes kind of comical. I used to, you know, I did 10 games when I was in Pittsburgh. And it was just a knock on the door. And the coach would go, yeah, I know. All right. And I go, no, you got to tell me again. I need to hear it again. And it becomes like, I don't want to say it becomes normal, but it's like, all right, I'm coming in, and you need to explain it to me again. I've done this in practice. I've done that. I feel better. I'm doing this. My hamstring that you said was bothering me and I don't look right is better now. I need to play. You know, there's a lot of conversations, and, you know, some of them you're upset and you want to break stuff on their desk and you want to jump over the desk. But, you know, it's part of being a pro, and, you know, and then it becomes the walk upstairs and you go to the GM. We got to figure this out. And it's tough. It's a miserable thing. But as a pro, you need to play. You want to play, and you want to go somewhere that you will play if you can't play here. So, you know, I'm happy it didn't go that long with Kyle. And I think Kyle's, you know, I hope he's going to come out and perform and play his game and let it all behind him.
Hal, be better for everybody.
Yeah.
Hal Gill presented by Puckett's. Hal, hopefully next time we see you, as the season of giving approaches, we'll see you with some school supplies for the kids.
Yes, I didn't know. Now I know. I should have brought my number two pencils.
So you got to check on Instagram. We need pencils and dry erase markers. We've also got notebooks and stuff, but pencils and dry erase markers to our offices, 1824 Murfreesboro Pike. Just drop them off there. And then, of course, did you know that $1,100 to Pencil, who Jared and the GM, LP Pencil Box, we've teamed up with, $1,100 is $100,000 in school supplies for Metro students. So that's just out there. We're trying to raise $1 million in school supplies for Metro students. Good to see you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. And I hope you're not a healthy scratch ever, Jerry.
Oh, you should have seen me Monday the other day when I wasn't here. I was definitely not a healthy scratch. That I can promise you. Jared the GM coming
Thanks,
up next. Predators.
Thanks,
game day. Today at during the Predators game, you'll see that Happy Hiller logo right there on the ice. That's because Hiller is a proud supporter of the National Predators. Hiller's actually coming out to my house tomorrow. That's how much I trust him. I use him at my own home. And not only do I like Hiller for their service, but I love Hiller because they care about our community. Hiller is partnering with Toys for Tots to spread the joy of Christmas this year. In addition to a $5,000 donation, Hiller will be donating $100 in toys for each tankless water heater purchase made. And during the promotion, customers will receive an additional $250 off their purchase price to boost those donations of toys with Toys for Tots. Each Hiller location will be partnering with their local Toys for Tots chapter, so get excited about that. Another reason to use Hiller. I've got them coming to my house tomorrow. It is why, one of the many reasons why I love Hiller. They love this community. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, proud supporters of the National Predators and the Tennessee Volunteers. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
From the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's game day in Smashville, brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes and Chino's East. What are Peter Laviolette's keys to the game? Who will be in and out of the lineup? It's time to break it all down on Jared and the GM on your flagship home of Smashville.
ESPN
1025 The Game.
Predators Game Day is sponsored by TJ Anderson Homes. Your road to Nashville area real estate starts at TJAndersonHomes.com. And Geno's East, get a historic slice of Chicago deep dish tradition before or after the game. Geno's East on the corner of 3rd and Korean Vets. Info at Geno'sEast.com. Preds and Bolts tonight. We start off with the coach's take, powered by TJ Anderson Homes. My friend TJ Anderson, TJAndersonHomes.com. Peter saying, hey, after that debacle in Florida, time to get back to what they did on Friday night.
Well, we were playing, I thought, a really good brand of hockey. You know, we were doing the right things with regard to the way we played with speed and the way we were competing on pucks and the way we were defending. And, you know, we got away from that in the Florida game. I thought everything just slipped a little bit. You know, there's a standard, I think, that you have to play to, and we let that standard slip. So we need to get back to that.
And, of course, I think we'd like to see that standard tonight against Tampa Bay. Meanwhile, taking a look at the lineup, Kyle Turris is in Floyd Reese today. Going back, he'll be the second-line center for the Predators. Matt Duchene moves up to the first line along with Forsberg and Johansson.
Wow. That'd be good. It'd be interesting for him. He'll go out, he'll play his butt off.
Taking a look at the standings. Ain't good to look at every day. Predators, at least they're ahead of the Blackhawks and the Wild. The Predators are 28 points, but Minnesota has tied the Predators with 28 points. How bad's that?
We don't like Minnesota much.
Preds with a game in hand. They are 5 behind Dallas at 33, 5 behind the Jets at 33, Colorado 34, St. Louis atop at 42. They may not even be able to catch them. Tonight, the Bolts, what are you watching for, Floyd?
You know what? I think Peter hit it on the head. Let's see him get back to the way they played Friday.
Big standard, big team, big names in Tampa Bay today. Big game for the Predators tonight. We're out of here. Predators pregame is next.